Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 30th of January, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcome back to the show only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi to chat about the latest controversies with the Bridgeport Board of Education and the city's school system. So bad, apparently, that Governor Lamont and the state are stepping in. Connecticut Inside investigator reporter Mark Sims joined us to talk about the latest legal action being taken by Eversource and Avangrid against the state's Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, or PURA. Finally, I had even more thoughts regarding the ongoing local hysteria over reported but false ICE agent sightings. All right, what's also not good is the state of the Bridgeport Board of Education. Lenny Grimaldi's here. He's got a piece on that at onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, how are you, sir? Good afternoon.
Papa Pacelli,
yeah.
Happy Year of the Snake.
That's what it is, right? Is that the new year we're in now, something like that?
Well, my favorite holiday is International Anaconda Day.
Okay.
So, you'll celebrate that?
Who does that? No, I don't. No, no.
Well, the snake that's going through the Bridgeport Public Schools.
Well, there you go. Now, there's a segue, Lenny. So, my God, this now you had one person that quit. Is the state, Lenny, going to come in here and just say, all you people sit down and shut up, act like adults, because here's what we need to do? It certainly sounds that way. What's going to happen here?
I think the action of the Connecticut State Board of Education last week makes this a de facto takeover. Not an official one, mm-hmm. but pretty darn close. It is without exactly saying it, and here's why. I mean, Ned Lamont, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah.
Because all governors don't want to get involved in this crap, right? He did Joe Gannon a huge favor.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They didn't even ask the state to come in, and they're coming in, right? So now it's a state issue. So here's what they did last week, which is intriguing. So last week, the Connecticut Board of Education authorized the State Education Commissioner, Charlene Russell Tucker, to come in. They gave her, like, broad authority to address the stability of operations, address student performance,
mm-hmm.
assign a technical assistance team to guide district initiatives. And you pointed out, require the school board to undergo training to advance operation efficiency and effectiveness. Why is this key? 15 years ago, the Bill Finch mayoral administration blindsided the entire city and had the Board of Education dissolve itself in favor of a state takeover.
Mm-hmm.
So the state came in for a while, blew out the local board, the local elected board, and assigned nine board members appointed by the state,
yeah,
right?
I remember that,
It was challenged by the court, and the court ruled state law requires before you take that action, the local school board must undergo training.
Yeah.
But it was defeated on a technicality. So I think, you know, in the back of their mind, if they officially take over, maybe that's why they wanted to throw this thing in. But the reality is that the state education commissioner can appoint, she has the authority to appoint a quote-unquote district improvement officer selected by the commissioner for a term of up to 1 year, and also authorized the hiring of a permanent superintendent of schools.
Wow.
So Camilla Levy David was shown the door, you know, whatever, 6-8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We're spending a year. So Royce Avery, I mean, God bless him. He's in a tough job.
Yeah.
He's a new acting school leader. So he's going to have the support of the state, at least on these levels. Is there going to be financial support? Who knows? We'll see what's coming down the line. But the state is very engaged and has a lot of skin in the game right now with the school system. And it's going to be intriguing to see how it's going to shake out because, you know, the problem with the school system is lack of stability. There's been like five.
Oh, I know.
In 7 years, there's been a carousel, revolving door of school board members. All of them are elected.
Yeah.
A nine-member board, Democrats, Republicans, minority party representation. So Republicans have skin in the game as well, which is a good thing. So they have been coming and going. They get elected and they quit. Someone replaces them. They quit. There's been so many school board members. I've got whiplash.
You know, Lenny, it's like, you know what I'm likening this to? I'm a big New York Jets fan, okay? And people will say, hey, you can take the Jets head coaching job, but in 2 or 3 years, yeah, you'll get paid, but your career's in the toilet. It almost sounds like the same thing to run the Bridgeport school system. Like, hey, the money's good. It's a good-sized city. There's a lot of resources, but you'll get chewed up and spit out. The ball's in your court. Sounds like my Jets.
Yeah, you keep remembering Super Bowl III, just like me.
That's it.
What else we got?
Hey, Lenny. Lenny, is part of the reason the state is coming in here now and kind of coming in hot and hard here, they see that 30, what is it, 32, 35, whatever $30 million plus deficit here. How does that happen? How does that happen?
I think that's part of what they're going to try to figure out. I think one of it, you know, you had the fiscal cliff because of all the federal COVID dollars. And they were relying on it and relying on it, you know, over and over again. And it got way out of whack. So I think what they're going to probably do is do an audit. Let's follow the money. Let's see where it went. Let's see the places it should not have gone. So I think it's going to be part of this whole process to find out why is it this big of a hole and how do we get out of it? There's been cuts already. So the school board has authorized cuts, dozens and dozens of school board employees are going to be gone. But it's not going to be nearly enough to cover the hole. And we'll see what happens in this, state legislative process. The governor is going to propose his budget. People are beating him up, the guardrails, giving some more money to the guardrails. There's the factor, the Trump thing. Pausing the federal dollars, that got reversed.
Mm-hmm.
So people are feeling a little bit better about that after freaking out for a full day and a half, right? That was crazy. My former boss, he's really good. He rescues media, right? He's rescued journalism once again.
Yes.
So all this is in play right now. And so the state decides, we got skin in the game and we want to take a look at this thing and make sure that it doesn't get out of hand, because Bridgeport is Connecticut's most populous city. And if the state's largest city does bad, it can hurt the creditworthiness of the state of Connecticut. I mean, they don't want that. I think Lamont's going, let's get involved.
Yeah.
Governor's Wooten, but he's decided to get involved, and so we're going to see how it shakes out.
And he's not a career politician. He may not run again. He doesn't care, which I think is a good thing. Finally, before we wrap up here, Lenny, you did mention your former boss, Mr. Trump. He is certainly back to flipping tables and smashing the good china again, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone has a hobby, and that's his, right? This is what he does. He loves it. He loves shaking it up, and it's... It gets really crazy, and and listen, he didn't waste any time, right?
No.
He's been back 10, 11 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go right forward. I mean, executive order's up to you-know-what.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's going, there's head spinning like Linda Blair in The Exorcist, right? They're vomiting pea soup.
The pea soup.
Trying to figure out what's going on. He's probably saying, hey, let's just have some fun.
Oh, are you kidding? He loves this. Now, will you make me one promise here? When you get invited to the first state dinner, can I tag along with you?
Oh, yeah. We're going to do a live remote.
Imagine that, WICC, live at the state dinner. And Al, Mr. President, come on over. I'll let you interview him, Lenny. How's that?
He's going to serve grilled anaconda for us.
Here you go. Lenny Grimaldi, check it out only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, be good. We'll have a good weekend. We'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
See you next week. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. There you go. Oh, that Bridgeport school takeover. Mark Fitch joins us, Connecticut Inside Investigator. And Mark's got some news regarding, I guess, another round, Mark, right, in the ongoing legal tussle here between Pura and some of the state utilities. And the utilities now are firing a legal salvo here. Good to have you, Mark. What's going on?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Paul. Well, yeah, the utility companies today, Eversource and Avangrid, filed an injunction in Superior Court, basically seeking to stop Pura, basically stop the chairperson, Marissa Gillette, from essentially running the kind of running the show on her own. They have been alleging and trying to prove through documentation and Freedom of Information requests that Marissa Gillette is appointing herself presiding officer over every docket and then issuing intermediary decisions and rulings, which have some real merit to them, on her own without it being, an actual action of the commission, and that she's been hiding this fact by issuing these rulings under the signature of the executive secretary. So it's kind of this long, nuanced legal argument, but it's really kind of shaping up into quite the drama. At first, Pura blew this off as much ado about nothing, and then they subsequently opened a docket to investigate themselves over this. And part of that docket, this is interesting, though, part of that docket contains a provision where none of the commissioners can actually talk about this. So Gillette, who is up for renomination, has to go before the nominations committee and answer their questions. Well, she's not going to be able to answer any questions about this particular issue. So part of the legal injunction today is you guys have to get rid of this whole investigating ourselves thing, because that's not going to fly. Basically, the utility companies are like, we don't have anywhere else to take our complaints to.
Yeah.
So we need the court to work this out.
And of course, this is wrapped up, Mark Fitch, in this whole thing about, hey, we can't get the rate increases we want. And then because we can't do that, we don't have enough ready cash. And because we don't have the cash, we can't make the critical infrastructure needs we need to make. So we're caught in this vortex here. And it's interesting, as you mentioned, Mark, I was going to ask you about this, but you dovetailed into it nicely, that initially, I remember a few months ago, Pura was like, oh, come on, this is nothing. You're grasping at straws. Well, apparently they're not grasping at straws, at least legally.
Well, and not only that, but even just today as well, the Energy and Technology Committee submitted legislation that would essentially make what Gillette has been doing fine. It would make what she's doing comport with state statute. You know, so they're looking to rewrite the statutes that govern Pura so that whatever she did is okay. So clearly, somebody's worried somewhere, and they're kind of circling the wagons on this as these two energy giants are saying, hey, listen, we've had enough, and we're taking our issues to court.
Mark Fitch is here. Check it out, Connecticut Inside Investigators, more of the legal battle between Pura and the utilities. And Mark, of course, you and I have talked about this. Should be five people on the Pura board. There's only three. And Pura, for people who may not know or have kind of an idea, the utilities can ask for whatever they want. Pura's got to say yes. And in that case, with every yes or no, they control tens and potentially hundreds of millions of dollars worth of possible rate increases. And again, these are increases, increasingly, no pun intended, that Pura says they need to keep pace with our energy needs.
Yeah, and, a lot of these things, this all became a big deal, over the last rate increase. And that last rate increase was all for public benefits, which Pura had allowed to stack up over the course of 4 years of pandemic and extended, actually, Gillette extended part of it herself through one of these executive secretary, rulings. And so we saw this big increase in our public benefits charges. And traditionally, people have always gotten mad at the utility company, but they're trying to kind of reverse course here and say, hey, look, don't get mad at us. Get mad at the politicians who are actually making us do these things. Because that's where these public benefits charges come from.
So finally, Mark Fitch, where does this all end up going now? Will this be heard by a court? Or is Pura, as you mentioned, legislatively, I guess, already trying? Is this going to try and be squashed here? What's the next step here, if we know?
Oh, of course the state's going to try to squash it. They'll probably make the argument that the utility companies haven't exhausted their administrative remedies, which is legal speak for, hey, you haven't let Pura figure out if you guys are right or not, but the utility companies are essentially saying that we don't have any recourse with Pura because They have already defended their actions publicly. And thinking that they're going to investigate themselves and come to a different conclusion and then, you know, find out that, you know, discover that they're actually biased against us, it's just not going to happen. So to the utility companies, they're like, we have no recourse other than going to a judge to get a fair and impartial hearing on this matter.
And you wonder, well, maybe if they did that, a judge would impose a gag order. But you wonder now, Mark, although I doubt they would do it because the elections are passed, was, or do they dip into the millions and millions of dollars they have and start waging a little bit of a, even though it could burn a lot of bridges, wage some sort of a PR campaign to try and, you know, push their view on this more?
What do you mean, like the who would wage the campaign? The state?
No. The utilities, like just saying, hey, you see who the real enemy is here? It's not us.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's been part of the Senator Norm Needleman's claims against Eversource is that they're essentially like weaponizing the media to make their points and score them some points, but. You know, let's face it, you know, it's going to be tough to drum up a lot of sympathy for these major corporations like Eversource and Avangrid. But at the same time, they might have a point as to how proceedings are being conducted by the state's regulator.
Yep. Connecticut Inside Investigator, our guy, Mark Fitch. Mark, thank you. Keep up the good work and we'll talk down the road, I'm sure, on this. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. So there you go. There you go, folks. Now you have court action now by the utilities. Avangrid, Eversource saying, hey, the way Pura is doing things, and Marissa Gillette, the woman who chairs Pura, is technically not legal. So I was home last night enjoying my sumptuous frozen microwave dinner. And I'm looking at single wide guy, suburban, what do you want? I'm looking at some of these poll numbers. Yesterday from the Quinnipiac University poll, the Q poll, it was the first poll they did post Donald Trump's second stint in the White House, the beginning, the inauguration, Trump 2.0, 10 days ago when he took office on the 20th. And this, I should have gotten on this earlier yesterday because it hit me right between the eyes. And I had to read these figures literally two or three times. I'm not doing that for effect here. I actually started reading these figures two or three times. And I said, what? How is this possible? Now, we know we live in a fractured country. Roughly 50% is on one side of the aisle. Roughly 50% is on the other side of the aisle. Okay, no big hocus pocus there. It's been kind of that way for the past 5 or 10 years. We get it. We understand it. The pendulum goes back and forth and back and forth, left to the right, to the left to the right. But I have to ask you something, and in particular, if you are not a Republican, if you are a centrist, an independent who leans Democratic, or if you're dyed-in-the-wool, tried-and-true Democratic voter, good on you. I need to hear from you, or I will hear from anybody, but I really want to hear how this impacts you or what your interpretation of this is. In the latest Quinnipiac poll, 31% of voters have a favorable opinion of the Democratic Party. 31%. Let's round it down, if you will, just to make it easier to digest or digest, as some people say, 3 out of 10. Do you realize how bad that is? That the party of JFK, the party of Bill Clinton, the party of Harry Truman, the party of the great Franklin Delano Roosevelt is at 31%, basically 3 out of 10 people have a favorable opinion of the Democratic Party. Now, that doesn't mean they support it or don't support it, but a favorable opinion is, yeah, I like what those guys do. Now, you may say to yourself, well, Paul, what are the Republicans at? The Republicans are at a whole heck of a lot better shape, but they're not at 50% either. The GOP heading into this current year, this month, with Mr. Trump, the titular head of the party, is at 43%. 45% have an unfavorable opinion. The rest, who knows? Who cares? They don't care. They didn't give an opinion. So the GOP is underwater, as they usually are from time to time, 43 to 45. The Democratic Party is underwater 31 to 57. 31 to 57. Now, I know that will change. It'll go up and down and up and down. But here's my question to a lot of you people out there who don't like Trump, who criticize Trump, and Lord knows he put his foot in the mouth again saying, well, you know, maybe DEI caused that plane and helicopter crash in D.C. Oh, he just can't stop. But having said that, even with the stuff like that, he says, the GOP, at least in this poll, and there are other polls, I'm sure that'll fluctuate, the GOP is 2 points underwater, 43 to 45. That's probably within the margin of error. That's 50-50, 45-45. They'll take that anyway. How in God's name, on God's green earth, how in God's name is the Democratic Party at 31 to 57? Favorable to unfavorable. How is that possible? And I'm not asking that in a sense of wanting to get some rhetorical response to it. No. 31 to 57. The present day Democratic Party is underwater on a measure of favorability by 26 points. Do you realize how bad that is heading into a new year? 26 points. I'll tell you what that is. It's pretty simple. You don't have to be a political Einstein or have a master's or a bachelor's or a doctorate in political studies. It's as plain as the nose on your face, my face, and everybody's face. We'll get into that momentarily. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. As much as, and Lord knows he deserves it sometimes, I'm not going to sit here and defend some of the stupidity from Mr. Trump. But the Republicans right now are 2 points underwater as far as favorability. 43 to 45, that's pretty much a statistical dead heat. But the party of Lyndon Johnson, John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, FDR, Harry, give him hell, Harry Truman, the buck stops here. National Democrats are underwater 31 to 57 on favorability. How is that possible? You cannot tell me it's all about Trump. You can't. And coming up in about 12 minutes or so, bottom of the hour, another update. We'll give them to you this afternoon, all afternoon long, till 6 at the top of the hour on the tragedy last night, that midair collision between a Sikorsky helicopter and a commuter jet at Reagan National Airport in D.C. So we'll update you on that every 30 minutes. But I'm starting with this today, and I kind of missed this yesterday, and I was poring over some numbers at home last night. 31% of all voters have a favorable opinion of the Democratic Party. 57% say it's unfavorable. Now, having said that, some of that 57% is not necessarily independents or Republicans. It's going to be Democrats who don't like the direction of their party. That's fine. But on the other hand, it's the lowest number, that Quinnipiac says has ever seen in a poll on that question since they started asking the question. 31%. I mean, do you realize how bad that is? In the latest Quinnipiac poll, 31% of voters have a favorable opinion of the Democratic Party, 3 out of 10, roughly. While 57%, roughly 6 out of 10, have an unfavorable opinion. Why is that? That's the highest percentage of voters having an unfavorable opinion of Democrats since the Quinnipiac University poll began to ask this question. Now, the Republicans aren't great either, but the Republican figure is 43 to 45. 43 favorable, 45 unfavorable, basically 50-50, nose above water. That's a statistical dead heat. That is the highest percentage of voters having a favorable opinion of the GOP since Quinnipiac started asking that question. So, Democrats, you tell me. I hear from a lot of you progressives out there who you think I go to bed at night with a Donald Trump doll. No, I don't. Believe me. But honestly, what is it with your party out there? And again, some of this negativity is going to be from disaffected Democrats. I get it. It's not just conservatives and Republicans going, ah, ha, ha, ha. And that shows you how insulated we are here in Connecticut from the rest of the country. I mean, this is a blue bastion here, which is fine. It's how people vote. I get it. But boy, 31% of the country thinks the Democrats are doing a good job. But here in Connecticut, hey, isn't this great? By the way, what are you going to do for our electrical price? Hey, but don't worry. We have a state legislator who puts up Hitler videos regarding Donald Trump. But hey, go you Connecticut Dems. So you know what the problem is? It's immigration. And I kept saying that for 2 years, and nobody would listen to me. Well, I'm sure some people did, but nobody on the other side would. Don't you think this comes from immigration? Come on. And I had a buddy of mine today, good friend. I haven't seen him in a while, but I see what he says on Facebook. Well, these ICE arrests, you know, Biden did this too. Okay, maybe he did, which leads to my point. Well, Trump is just making a big deal about it. Well, yeah, you should make a big deal when you get thugs off the street that shouldn't be here. Why didn't the Biden people do that? Half rhetorical, half serious question. Why didn't the Biden people do that? See, here's my point, and I've said this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. You can already see where the Democrats are taking the Trump bait hook, line, and sinker because it's all about him, and they don't have the smarts to step back and say, you know, a lot of our policies suck, and people don't like them. And instead, we're going to scare kids about ICE coming into their schools and ICE coming into their churches and ICE taking mommy and daddy and ICE taking Nana and Papa. Instead of getting together and making a statement saying, hey, we're working. Well, no, you can't. See, the problem is you can't work with ICE. That's the problem. If they had a brain, they'd work with ICE and say, see, we want to make your neighborhood safer. You know, ICE was looking for a couple of really bad hombres, as number 47 says, and we helped get rid of them. So, see, we do care about safety. But every freaking thing with these people is about Trump. And they take the bait hook, line, and sinker every time. So you tell me, if you are, in fact, a registered Democrat, if you hate Trump, if you're counting down the days till he finishes out this term, more than likely in 4 years, but we don't know what his health is going to do and all that. We never know about what's happening 10 minutes from now versus 4 years from now. You tell me, what's the answer here? Is it still digging in on some of these policies that I guess a chunk of America doesn't like? Now, again, this is all fluid. I understand it. But my God, how is the party? And I'll mention it again, because when you look back, this is how a party defines itself. You know, the Republicans are called the party of Reagan, the party of Lincoln, the party of Eisenhower, the party of the good parts of Richard Nixon, of which there were many. His paranoia got in the way. His vindictiveness did. But boy, you folks who are on the other side of the aisle, when you have stalwarts like, you know, Harry Truman and the great FDR, Lyndon Johnson, Bill Clinton, John F. Kennedy, you're at 31%. How on earth does that happen? 203-333-9422. And I'm reading these stories today, and Chris Murphy's mentioned in them, and Rosa DeLauro. Oh, we're going to resist Trump. Okay, you can resist. That's mounting some sort of passivity to what's going on. What are you actively going to try to do to put 1 or 2 feet forward and say, hey, we have better policy ideas? Is it that hard? I had somebody I was chatting with during the campaign. Well, Republicans will never elect a woman president. Well, why do you say that?
Well, because they didn't vote for Hillary and they didn't vote for Geraldine Ferraro back in the day for VP, and they're not voting for Kamala Harris. Well, they don't agree with the policies. It's all about gender with you people. It's all about the human body, what equipment it has and it doesn't have. It's mind-boggling. Yet you get people once again like Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal and Rosa DeLauro and Jim Himes, and it's all about Trump. It's not about Trump. Because if it was about Trump, he wouldn't have won again. It's that simple. If Donald Trump was so abhorrent in the minds of people, he wouldn't have won. Not that people love the guy, but they took a look at him, and they took a look at what you were offering up, and what you were not doing about certain hot-button issues, and went, we'll take the jerk on the other side, who people perceive to be a jerk anyway. How is this so difficult? But again, I'd love to hear from you as we start off here. If you tend to be progressive, if you're not a Trump lover, and I know there are a lot of anti-Trump people here, that's fine. I don't want one party or the other party to control everything. Number one, it's boring. Number two, it's dangerous. But man, when the other side is down to 31%, at least in this poll, never mind Trump, 31% approval for one party in basically a two-party country, that should scare you.